Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, listeners. It's Sadie popping in from the future here. We did not know at the time of recording this episode that Amish romance novels can cause real-life objectification and harm to Amish and former Amish women. I thought the evangelical fantasy of the Amish portrayed in these novels was so far removed from the real world that harm wouldn't come from these novels in the real world, but I've since learned that I was wrong about that. We sincerely apologize for accidentally leaving out that important information. I wanted to have that information available to listeners at the start of this episode while we are learning more about this issue. We also want to let you know that we will not be revisiting this topic without direct input from Amish survivors. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Leaving Eden podcast. Happy Valentine's Day to all of our listeners out there. If you have a Valentine, tell them that you love them. If you don't, I hope you find one if that's something that you want.
And all of our listeners are our Valentines every year for Valentine's Day.
It's true. We love all of you. Sadie Carpenter is your host, as always. Cult expert, cult survivor, Sadie Carpenter. My name is Gavrielle Huck-Owen. How is life treating you right now, Sadie?
Oh, pretty great. I am really excited about this episode.
I am too. This episode, I would not feel good about doing this episode if I didn't give shout out to Arch Radish, aka Chad Harris, friend of ours, IBLP survivor. You know him from Shiny Happy People. He was the very prominently featured in that documentary. Every Sunday he goes on TikTok Live. He does what is not church, right, is what he calls
it's
it.
It's not church.
Yeah, it's not church, where he, you know, hangs out, he talks to people, talks to you know, deconstructorinos, talks about experiences, talks about the IBLP fundamentalism in general. Great time, highly recommend it. A couple weeks ago, he was talking, he just made an offhanded comment about how much fundamentalists love Amish romances. And I was there, I was present for that, and I messaged Sadie immediately and said, for Valentine's Day, we have to talk about Amish romances.
And it was just perfect, because I had already been talking to another friend of the pod, Alora Dodd, about Amish romance, like, fairly recently. So it felt like the stars aligned. Or the buggy wheels aligned for us to do this episode.
That's good. And, you know, at this point, I had already ordered, I think, a marriage book by Jack Skop that Sadie had found. She had a copy of it. I bought a copy of it for, like, $5 including shipping. It was like $5.33 if you ever want to buy one of these Fundy marriage books. They're very cheap on eBay. And we were planning on maybe talking about that, but then I put a poll up on the Patreon and people decided that they would, I think by like a 2-to-1 margin, people wanted to hear about the Amish romances. So today we're talking about the Amish romances, giving the people what they want.
Let's talk about bonnet rippers.
Ooh, bonnet rippers. That's good. But before we get into that, the Leaving Eden podcast is the podcast about my BFF and co-host Sadie Carpenter's life in and escape from the Independent Fundamental Baptist cult, the cult in which she was raised, also known as the IFB. We talk about this cult. We talk about other cults. We talk about religion. We talk about fundamentalism. We talk about the real and present threat that cults and cult ideologies pose to society as a whole. And it is our goal to promote freedom of mind, freedom of thought, and freedom of religion. So if you like our show and you are a fan of our show, you can do some things to support us. You can join our Patreon at patreon.com/leavingedenpodcast, where you will get to hear the Patreon Valentine's Day special episode, where we're going to review the Jack Scott book that you guys decided that you would rather hear the Amish romance story. So we're doing the Jack Scott book over on the Patreon, and you can get that if you're a patron. Also, you can subscribe to our Facebook group. You can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/EdenExodus. You can join our subreddit, reddit.com/r/EdenExodus. Both great discussion places. We've had a lot of great discussions lately. A lot of fun stuff. People mostly really support each other if they have stories to tell. Fantastic, positive community. I think there's like 3,600 people in there, which is kind of incredible. Yeah, and I think that's all we've got to say. Sadie, do you want to thank the patrons?
Sure thing. Our I Gave It All tier patrons are I'm Not 1010, Kathleen Moncrief, Melissa Mosley, Melora King, and Todd Dale on behalf of his wife, Madeline Antrim.
Thank you so much.
Huge thank you to our I Gave It All tier patrons. Our Faith Promise Missions tier patrons are Alex P., Allie Allen, Autumn of Our Discontent, Brittany, Krissa Walker, Dora J., Eleanor Donahue, Hannah Ross, Hannah Montana, Hope Norum, Horton Hears a Shane, Janine Callen, Jen Kaharski, Jessica Tambeau, Jonna, Kat Hinwood, Kay Terwee, Kristen Marie, Learned Vixen, Linda Morgan, Madeline Antrim, Madeline Cusick, Marlena Stuve, Marcia Millard, Mary Williams, Mary Martin, Megan Arndt, Melissa G., Rob the Methodist, Stephanie Johnson, Stephen Amy, Susie, Tara McNamara, and Wes the Cowboy.
Thank you guys so much for joining our Patreon at the Faith Promise Mission and I Gave It All Tears. Wonderful. Yes.
And thank you to everybody who supports us on Patreon at any amount. We hope you enjoy the bonus content, early episodes, all that over there. And thank you to everyone who supports us in non-financial ways, like being subscribed on whatever podcast app you use, downloading our episodes, sharing us on social media, sharing us with friends and family. All of that adds up and makes a difference.
All right. We're ready to hit the TW and then we're going to go.
In general, we talk about a lot of potentially triggering topics on this show, including but not limited to suicide, mental health, racism, misogyny, PTSD, PTSD symptoms, child abuse, mental, physical, and sexual abuse, and spiritual abuse, including guilt, shame, and fear. In most episodes, we will mention at least a few of these topics, but we try to avoid graphic detail unless it's relevant to the story that we're telling on that particular day. And if we are going to give graphic detail, we give the audience a heads up before we do so.
All right. So we're talking Amish romance novels today. Let's just talk romance novels in general. Is that cool?
Yeah, for sure.
I did some research on this. Stories of love, lust, and romance have been around as long as people have been telling stories. Many mythologies, legends, even religious texts contain stories of romance, including the Bible. Song of Solomon, anybody? As love, relationships, sex, and romance are highly central to human desire, human motivations, and human nature, so it is only natural that stories are popular with all kinds of people. Romance stories are popular with all kinds of people. And throughout every medium that stories can be told, most notably in book form. So Samuel Richardson published what is widely considered to be the first ever romance novel in 1740, titled Pamela or Virtue Rewarded. Fun fact, this book was also considered to be the first ever English novel. It was also the first ever novel to be published in America when Benjamin Franklin had it published in 1742 in Philadelphia. Wow. That's crazy. Just a few blocks from where I'm recording this right now. That's incredible. The genre of romance became a mainstay of printed novels. Some within the genre are considered to be high literature, including those by Jane Austen. Some, however, are considered to be little more than written pornography. So a wide range of intended purposes for this genre. So there's a lot of variation within it. Today, romance is the most popular genre of fiction books, making up about $1.5 billion in sales in 2022. Billion with a B. Wow. That's a lot of book sales. The genre's popularity is partially due to the mass appeal of romance themes, but also the versatility of the genre. So a good romance can take place anywhere, at any time, in any setting. I actually visited a bookstore in Brooklyn last month that specializes in romance novels, and they had a huge variety. Really cool place. I think it's called The Ripped Bodice. It's right by the Barclays Center.
That's cute.
Yeah, and it was actually a really cool store. They had sections of like historical, they had like sections of sci-fi. There was a big section of like LGBTQ plus themed romance novels, and the entire decor of like the walls were all just like book pages and like old books that had kind of been like stapled. It was a really cool textural thing. Very cool place to go visit, The Ripped Bodice in Brooklyn. It's right near the Barclays Center. Romance novels can be hundreds of pages long with tons of exposition and character development, or they can be short and sweet novellas. Romance novels also have been one of the genres that has been expanded prolifically by young first-time authors taking advantage of the internet to publish ebooks. Of course, romance novels have a bit of a reputation for possibly being not suitable to the impressionable eyes of women and girls in the IFB who need to be 16 years or older to read The Song of Solomon. Which brings us to the fundy love for the Amish romance subgenre.
Okay. Thank you, by the way, for that preamble. I really enjoyed that.
I learned quite a few things when I was putting that together, and I wanted to share all that new information with you guys too.
Amish romance novels, which would more properly perhaps be called Amish-themed Christian romance novels, were incredibly popular among evangelical Christian women from around 1997 to 2017. I'm sure their popularity within the IFB was a little less broad, as we're going to get into in this episode. There are a lot of reasons for IFB people to love and approve of Amish romance as a genre, but IFB churches in general tend to make reading romance novels a bit of a no-no, so it's a little more spotty whether or not a particular IFB church would be super into the Amish romance or no. In my church growing up, romance novels like the stereotypical Fabio cover, paperback Daniel Steele, whatever, were of course strictly banned. The reasoning was it's porn for women, and because women aren't visually stimulated the way that men are, but women's emotions are what can be irresponsibly stimulated, much like men can be irresponsibly stimulated by seeing an immodest woman. And if we let women read these romance novels, they will read it. They will get unrealistic expectations of their husbands. They won't be attracted to their husbands. They will want a perfect man like in the romance novel. And of course, we can never expect a real man to behave like that. There's a lot wrong with that idea, but the IFB believes that viewing pornography will make husbands unattracted to their regular non-porn star wives. So it kind of tracks that they think that romance novels will make wives unattracted to their regular non-bodice-ripping husbands. The premise is bad, but the conclusion is not totally unfair between the genders. So you would very often hear in the IFB romance novels being preached against from the pulpit as part of the very long list of things that IFB people are supposed to avoid. No drinking, no dancing, no movie theaters, no smoking, no premarital sex, no porn, no romance novels. But in my experience, when they said romance novels, they really meant like Danielle Steele, you know, paperback, muscly guy with long hair on the cover, romance novels. In my church, it didn't apply to Jane Austen or other classic works or to Christian fiction as long as it was Christian enough. I know there are certainly IFB churches that are more Puritan that would discourage any kind of romance novels, or that would say only Christian romance novels, but the church that I was in, anything historical or Christian that didn't portray sex outside of marriage and didn't have any curse words was generally okay. A Christian fiction book that had lots of Bible verses in it, that had characters that maybe kissed or held hands before marriage, was probably okay. So I did read a lot of Karen Kingsbury novels growing up as well. But at the particular time that I was growing up, deep in evangelical fundamentalist subcultures, there was one genre of Christian fiction that was having a major heyday. And that is Amish romance.
Yeah, how popular were they? So you found an article about this.
Mm-hmm. According to the LA Review of Books, in 2012, a new Amish romance novel appeared on the market about every 4 days.
Wow.
According to LibraryJournal.com, Amish fiction was the number one type of Christian fiction carried in public libraries, with a stunning 91% of public libraries in the United States carrying some Amish fiction in the Christian fiction section in the year 2013.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That really is. Wow.
And indeed, the public library was the place that I got fully addicted to Amish fiction as a teenager. My library had a full collection of Beverly Lewis books, and I read, just tore through them. I also read other Christian fiction big names like Ted Decker, who we should do an episode on. He's like the evangelical Stephen King. Interesting guy.
Are his books good?
I thought they were when I was a teenager, and I had not read Stephen King. I don't know if it would hold up or not.
I mean, if you liked it, I mean, you read classic literature too, though. So, I mean, it's not like you were only reading.
Yeah, but do you remember when we did the Bob Larson episode and we talked about the book that he supposedly wrote and then it came out later that he had a secretary write it for him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I am worried that it's going to be like that if I go back and reread Ted Decker. I mean, he wrote his own books, but the cringe factor, you know? We'll maybe have to go back and explore Ted Decker at some point. But I read Ted Decker, I read Karen Kingsbury, I read Beverly Lewis, and I read all of the Left Behind and Left Behind Teen books by Tim LaHaye.
In doing the research for this episode, I also stumbled upon an interesting article about how libraries choose which books to buy. Fascinating subject. So they'll take into account the national demand for a book. They'll take into account whether the genre or author has been popular in the past. They'll look at their individual branches' demographics, as well as the cost of the book per unit. So romance novels in general are a popular genre. There are a lot of Christians who would want to read a romance novel. And Amish romance novels have a history of being checked out often. Also, romance novels tend to be paperbacks. They tend to be released right away as paperbacks rather than doing the usual thing where they'll have a hardcover first and then later it'll come out as a paperback. So that means that when a book is freshly published, you can usually get them for a lower price per unit. So it would make sense that a lot of libraries would have Amish romance novels in their catalog.
So availability in libraries is far from the cause of the evangelical obsession with Amish romance, but it probably is a way that a lot of people were first exposed to it, just like I was. Today, we're going to be digging into some of these causes, the people behind the books, my theories of why they were acceptable for me to read as an IFB teen. I think it's important to note before we get into the actual books that we're talking about, but there is a subgenre of Amish fiction that is billed as inspirational fiction. You will see words like faith and hope used in the description, but not words like Christian or salvation. Harlequin has an entire line of these called the Love Inspired series. The tagline for the Love Inspired series is, fall in love with stories where faith helps you, where faith helps guide you through life's challenges and discover the promise of a new beginning.
So why would they do this? Are they trying to smuggle Christian themes in to get the heathens to read it too?
No, I think it's Harlequin wants to cash in on this market, but they don't want to publish explicitly Christian books.
Oh, so it's the other way around.
It's the other way around.
Right thought, wrong way. Right. Okay.
So I checked one of these books out because it's Harlequin. Like, I thought, surely this is Amish fiction with actual sex in it. It's by, like, because of the publisher. Massive, massive romance novel publisher. I thought, this book, it's called Her Scandalous Amish Secret by Jocelyn McClay.
I mean, that sounds steamy.
It does. So I thought, okay, it's published by Harlequin. It's called Her Scandalous Amish Secret. By the way, try pronouncing, if you're listening to this episode, pause the episode and try to pronounce that title. It's incredibly hard to say out loud.
Yeah, it was a little tongue twister.
So this is the blurb for that book. She's made mistakes. Now she's back to fix them. After a life-changing event, Lydia Troyer returns to her Amish community to repair her damaged reputation. But the baby she brings with her raises more questions than she can answer. Proving she's changed while keeping her secret becomes even harder when she finds carpenter Jonah Lapp working on her family home. Jonah is the only man she's ever loved, but winning back his trust will be hardest of all. I read multiple reviews for this book. I really tried to find out what was in it. It is not nearly as Christian branded as Beverly Lewis books are, but this book is not Amish smut. It's not.
I mean, when it says, oh, he's a carpenter, the jokes write themselves. You know, you can, everybody listening can fill in those blanks.
So I thought that was what it's going to be, but it absolutely was not. It's literally just inspirational pseudo-Christian, but not explicitly Christian, Amish romance novel.
Is there Amish romance novels with actual sex in them?
I did check. Yes, I did look this up. And yes, there are. but more like erotica novels, like 50 Shades stuff, or like even more so. I did not find a lot of books between the chaste inspirational romance on one side and the dirty, dirty smut on the other side. Not that there's anything wrong with enjoying either or both of those things, but I did not find anything like an Amish romance novel with steamy scenes, but the sex is not the whole plot. There seems to be a gap in the market between those two things. what I did find is a book called A Forbidden Rumspringa by Kira Andrews, which is a gay Amish erotica novel, which is a sentence I never thought I would say.
I can imagine why somebody would want to read that, though.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're not looking for 50 Shades of Plain, you know, and you're not looking for like the inspirational novel, so there's nothing in between those.
I didn't find anything in researching for this episode. But it totally makes sense that this would be like a lot of erotica readers who are especially reading hetero erotica are looking for very traditionally masculine male leads. So playing with traditional roles of masculinity and femininity, Amish totally makes sense. Like I totally get where people are coming from. I was just a little surprised that there wasn't more of a spectrum. It was just more of a binary.
I guess it also is maybe good that there's a separation between the two, because you wouldn't want any good chaste IFB ladies reading Amish erotica by mistake.
I really don't feel that a person who is looking for one of these two things is going to accidentally find the other.
I actually read a Beverly Lewis Amish romance book in preparation for doing this episode. So why don't we go to break and then we will come back and I will talk about that.
Okay, let's do it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Sadie here. If this is your first time listening to the Leaving Eden podcast, make sure you go back and check out episode 57. It's a primer episode for new listeners. That episode tells my personal story and gives you all the terms and information that you'll need to know going forward. Also, check out our cult true crime series, The First Family of Fundamentalism, so that you can get the whole cult story. If you like our show, you can support us by joining our Patreon, where we have extended and uncensored episodes, as well as other bonus content available. You can also join in the discussion in our Facebook group. That group is called Eden Exodus. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell your worst enemy. The Leaving Eden podcast is a fully independent podcast, and we really appreciate your support. Now, back to the show.
We are back from our break. We are talking about the woman who started the whole Amish romance craze. Her name is Beverly Lewis.
Beverly Lewis is possibly the queen of all Amish romance. Her novel, The Shunning, was the first runaway success among Amish romance. Like most writers of Amish fiction, Beverly Lewis is not Amish herself, but she does have ties to the Amish community. Her grandmother was born into the Old Order Amish community. Lewis's father was an Assemblies of God pastor in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So Lewis interacted with Amish people regularly as a young person, and she was interested in that part of her heritage. She also spent time living with actual Amish people in preparation for writing some of her books. In 1997, Lewis published The Shunning. It is the first book in the Heritage of Lancaster County series. It was not the first ever Amish romance book, but it was the book that started the 20-year avalanche of Amish fiction between 1997 and 2017.
In preparation for doing this episode, I read The Shunning by Beverly Lewis. And by read, I mean I got the audiobook and I listened to the audiobook on like 1.5 speed. The Shunning is a book about a young woman named Katie who is preparing to marry a 40-year-old widower who is a bishop in the community. She is marrying him because the love of her life, Daniel, apparently died in a drowning accident. In the week leading up to her marriage, she goes up to the attic of her parents' house to look at her mother's wedding dress. And with her mom's wedding dress, she finds satin baby clothes with a name that she does not recognize on them. She then comes to learn that the clothes were meant to be hers and that she was actually adopted. Her mother was an Amish woman and her father was an outsider, but after her mother died in childbirth, she was brought up by an Amish family. When she seeks out to meet and to develop a bond with her birth father, she is then shunned by her community. I've also read the summaries of books 2 and 3 in this series. And
spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert if you haven't read them. Her mother isn't really dead, Daniel isn't really dead, nobody's really dead, and she has to choose whether or not she wants to go back to the Amish or live outside the community.
So what does she choose in the end?
According to people on Goodreads who reviewed this book, she chooses the outside world. According to reviewers on Goodreads, the third book in the series, The Reckoning, has a strong evangelical bent to it. And the readers who are reading it for that reason liked it, but the readers who weren't reading it for that reason did not like it. Like, apparently The Reckoning... So the first book is called The Shunning, the second book is called The Confession, and the third book is called The Reckoning. Apparently The Reckoning, the evangelical bent that The Reckoning had, is one that was not as prevalent in the previous two. And so readers who got to this book were like, this is different. And they also complained about some plot holes and unresolved issues at the end of the story, but that's... Mm-hmm. You know, neither here nor there.
So I'm going to read this quote from the LA Review of Books article in full in a couple minutes. But I'm going to read just a little portion of it right now. Katie has also had a personal conversion experience and says to her adoptive Amish mother, "But Mama, following the Ordnung, that's the Amish code of conduct, isn't what matters. Don't you see? Being a follower of Jesus is what counts." That's from the Reckoning.
We just triggered everybody who is a deconstructor. Following the IFB rules isn't what matters as long as you're still Christian.
Jesus. So I looked it up. Katie chooses a compromise. She becomes Mennonite, which, for those who don't know, very broadly speaking, you could say, oh, Mennonite is less strict than Amish, but slightly more strict than the strictest IFBs. Like a middle step between like Amish and IFB.
Are the Mennonites Calvinist?
Put a pin in that. Because I'm going to dig into the evangelical bent of these things, but I want to finish talking about the shunning first.
My thoughts on this book. I thought this book was well written. I think this book was better written than most of the books that I've had to read for this podcast, but considering that most of the books that I've had to read for this podcast were written by people with fake honorary doctorates that they awarded to themselves, that isn't saying much.
Yeah.
On the steaminess meter, it gets like a tepid 1, but on the Amishness meter, it gets a 10. So if you like Jesus and you don't like the steam, book for you. Go check it out.
My general opinion, and I haven't revisited a Beverly Lewis novel in a very long time, but my general opinion is that her books are on par with the quality of the average popular secular romance novel. It's not stunning, world-class, every word and sentence is a masterpiece level writing, but neither are most romance books, and neither is anything I've ever written. It's not the genre. And these, I don't think Beverly Lewis's books are any worse in writing style than the average romance novel.
The thing that I thought about reading these books was that in the characters' dialogue, in hearing them talk and hearing them use their words, you could tell, okay, this is a person who understands this culture, who has spent time to learn about this culture and hasn't just read a Wikipedia article and then plopped a character down into it and then just like taken a couple trappings of that. No, it felt like very immersive in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
As far as quality goes in romance books, if a 10 is Jane Austen and a 1 is the Zootopia abortion comic and a 3 is E.L. James, then this is like a solid 6.5.
So other than the evangelism, why are Amish romances popular, or were Amish romances popular among mainstream evangelical women? So these books are clean. There's no swearing. They might portray a little bit of drinking or a little bit of canoodling during Rumspringa, but it's not it's not anything graphic or gritty. These books romanticize farm life and simple pleasures. Rumspringa is just a banger of a plot point. It's a real cultural thing that a lot of groups of Amish do, but it is such a unique thing. For people who don't know, Amish people live by a very strict code of conduct, similar to the IFB, but even stricter on dress code. They do not use electricity for most applications. They farm and live a very simple life. When kids are about 16, they give their kids an opportunity to break the rules, to experience the outside world. The rules are briefly relaxed, and the teenagers kind of get into a lot of mischief. And then at around 18 to 20 years old, the kids are expected to come back to the church, be officially baptized into the church. And after a person is baptized, if they break the rules after their baptism, that is when a person can be shunned.
So did you wish that you could have like a Rumspringa from the IFB?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. All the time. Like every time I read these books.
Maybe there's like an Amish romance novel to Deconstruction Pipeline.
I'm going to get to that. But you can understand how Rumspringa, like the ability to go out and experience the world, but the expectation that you're going to come back and get baptized, it totally makes sense how that's a great plot point for a novel. The Amish way of life is also a great way to, it's a framework to bring in emotional plot points like widows. There's a lot of widows in these books. Family disasters, the infamous buggy accidents. There are a lot of buggy accidents in these books. Or mysterious sicknesses. In short, the idealized and fantasy version of Amish life is very rich soil for a whole variety of different plot points, drama, difficulty, and romance. There is no unmarried sex in these books, at least not with any graphic detail, and not without devastating consequences.
Oh, so it's like Hays Code.
Yeah. There's also no married sex in these books. They will like draw the curtain on the wedding night, and then the epilogue will have the couple with four kids. So you know that it happened.
Once you get married, that's when the book ends.
They'll be like this sweet, tender, and you know, and they were married and they went off to her parents' house where they would begin their life together as man and wife. She dismounted tenderly from the buggy as he held her hand in his. They walked into the house together and their new world together had begun. The end. And then in the epilogue, there's a bunch of kids. So that's kind of how they tend to write the married sex in these books.
Steam.
When people have unmarried sex, there's no detail. They will sometimes inform you that it happened in a lot of euphemistic language, and then bad things happen to the person every time. I'm going to talk about the Abram's Daughters series a little later in the episode. There's a lot of consequences in that series. So while there is no unmarried sex in general, there is plenty of sexual tension. I linked an article from Newsweek called 50 Shades of Amish that explored a lot of these tropes and had really good examples. So I recommend that article.
Banger of a article title.
There are a lot of stolen kisses and unsteady buggy dismounts. Like, is it even Amish fiction if a female main character doesn't slip and nearly fall down, getting out of a buggy only to be caught by the male main character, to which she then blushes bright red as he slowly lowers her down to the ground. Then he apologizes for touching her. And then in a lot of these books, you will get a page or two of both of them worrying about whether it was a sin.
If there was an IFB romance fiction novel series, that trope would be the couple lining up to walk across the ice patch.
Yes, exactly.
For evening church service or Sunday night church.
You do occasionally get some really steamy stuff in these Amish novels, such as bundling. Gavi, do you know what bundling is?
No. Should I look it up on Urban Dictionary?
It's not really worth your time. Bundling is like the Amish version of soaking, but like way less, like whatever you're thinking, like not even that. So when Amish kids are courting, they're expected to do a lot of time. They're expected to spend a lot of time together at night because they're busy doing their chores during the day. During warm weather, courting often happens in buggy rides, so they'll just ride around on dirt roads late into the night. But when it's really, really bitter cold, Amish couples, in some orders, will get in the same bed with a huge wooden board between them called bundling board to prevent any. So they're in the same bed and they can stay warm, but they can't actually touch each other. Bundling is very much a historical thing. It was common in colonial America outside any particular religious practice. But as it fell out of fashion everywhere else, some orders of the Amish kept it up. So that's the really spicy stuff that might happen in one of these Amish novels, like they're sneaking, holding hands over the bundling board, or falling out of buggies onto each other, or stealing kisses down by the lake. So you see why this would be really up my alley as a fundy teenager.
Oh, totally. So there's the, you have the taboo of like physical contact. And then there's the, oh, we're spending time alone with each other and we're not chaperoned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can only imagine that as a fundy kid, that would feel really spicy.
But I wouldn't feel too guilty reading it because nobody was ever actually going to have sex. There were plenty of Bible verses in there and somebody would always get saved and get married in the end.
So when you were a fundy teenager, what was it that you were getting out of reading these books?
There are a lot of like deconstruction light themes in these books. All of the main characters are late teens, early 20s, young people who are growing up in a restrictive, high control environment, just like I was. They are expressing frustration with parts of the rules. They're working out in their minds what rules they plan on adhering to and what rules they don't think are worth it. They are focused on marriage and future family, and they know that their relationship with the rules affects their ability to get married or who they are going to marry. So all of that was very relatable to me as a fundy teenager. So a lot of the books focus on young adults during Rumspringa courtship, deciding whether they're going to be baptized into the church, deciding who they're going to marry, making that kind of huge life-altering decision. Because if you're a young person who grew up Amish and you decide not to get baptized into the church, you can still have contact with your family. You won't be shunned, but you can't be a full part of the community either. And you can't marry anybody from the community unless they are also willing to not get baptized with you. So it sets up a lot of natural drama about, well, this character doesn't want to be baptized into the church because they don't think they can follow all the rules and they think they're going to get shunned. But their boyfriend or girlfriend does want to get baptized into the church. So they have to choose between, do I get baptized to marry this person that I'm in love with, or do I not get baptized so I don't run the risk of getting shunned?
That is really high stakes. So that's real stakes.
For real. So it's almost like a love triangle between two people and the church, or two people in the community, the community's expectations. So that's the most common trope. The other really common one is someone has a secret. Are they going to keep it or not? And then the third most common would be a love triangle. Someone is deciding between two potential marriage partners.
So a book where somebody like goes through all of this stuff and like all of this emotional turmoil of, do I stay? Do I go? I've seen the outside world. Do I want to be out there? Or do I want to come back? And then they decide that they want to come back anyway would be very effective at reinforcing the ideas that you were grown up with. You could say, we don't need an IFB Rumspringa because look at this character in this book. Like, she went out on Rumspringa and she decided to come back. So that's what always happens. We might as well just like skip the part in the middle because we already know what the right answer is.
The books often will punish characters who do Rumspringa wrong, like do too much. The books reward people who do the expected amount of mischief during their running around time.
So what's the expected amount of mischief?
Drinking a little bit, staying out all night, courting, buggy races, and the usual mischief, playing guitar, because Amish do not use musical instruments. So playing a musical instrument is like, ooh, big sin. Look at me, wild oats.
So that's stuff, except for the drinking, would be a sin if you're Amish, but not a sin if you're IFB, except for the like drinking a little bit.
Yeah, and being in, I guess being in a buggy with somebody that you're dating that you're not married to.
Yeah.
Without a chaperone.
A buggy, yeah. Not a car.
Well, I mean, it's the same rule. So it's people who do it right are rewarded in these books, but people who go outside the expected amount of mischief are usually punished. That was something that made an impression on me, but also in my young mind, it was, well, the Amish have so much stricter rules, and still they so often choose to be baptized into the church after Rumspringa, so maybe I should just be thankful for being able to wear printed fabrics and play piano.
People who go maybe a little bit too far. That's a deconstruction thing, though, too. People who, you know, maybe you're in your early 20s and you decide that you want to leave repressive religious group, and you've been taught basically all drugs are the same, all sex that's outside of marriage is a sin, and all sins are equal. Then maybe you go a little bit over the top and you start drinking all day, and you're like, marijuana and cocaine are similar in dangerousness of them. Or, you know, you're just like, well, in for a penny, in for a pound with like drinking. And then you're just going to be like, I'm going to do 10 shots tonight because that's a good idea for me to do it. And then you think, oh, wow, drinking is bad because I did too much.
Right. And that's definitely something that happens to young deconstructors because of the all or nothing thinking in the IFB. We're always taught it's very black and white. It's very all or nothing. It's all sins are equal. So if you do any sin, it's just as bad as doing the worst sin. So people sometimes run with that and then get over their head in things that I wouldn't call a sin, but things that are bad for them. So I'm going to come back with some statistics about these books. We're going to get into it. We're going to skip back and talk about the evangelism, and then we're going to get there. Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay. So I'm going to read the whole quote from the LA Review of Books article that I was reading. Actually, no, I'm not. I'm just going to go back to the end of that quote. The trilogy that The Shunning inaugurates follows Katie on her journey to find her birth mother, claim her real identity as an heiress, and eventually reunite with the long-lost love of her youth, Daniel, who also grew up Amish. By the end of the series, Katie and Daniel have made a partial return to Amishness by becoming conservative Mennonites, a liminal space between plain and fancy. Katie has also had a personal conversion experience and says to her adoptive Amish mother, "But Mama, following the Ordnung Amish code of conduct isn't what matters. Don't you see, being a follower of Jesus is what counts." These books work very hard to portray themselves as respectful to the Amish. From a lot of authors, I feel like it's well-intentioned. From some, I don't. But when the rules of the Amish are portrayed as overbearing, they're portrayed as misguided and not malicious. The vibe is very much, oh, these poor people, they think that you have to follow all these rules to get into heaven. Isn't that silly? Or the vibe can be, they just like being old-fashioned and quaint. They don't really see it as a rule. And I don't think either one of those portrayals are exactly accurate. In these novels, most of the time, women consent to the patriarchal structures of their community, which I don't think is accurate.
Somebody who was raised in a lesser version of that.
I don't think Amish women have as much opportunity to consent to the patriarchal structure as these books make them out to. In these books, if women rebel against the patriarchy of their community, it's only to an extent. It's only a little bit of rebellion. And they often will end up married to a patriarchal manly man who just happens to give them a lot more leeway than whatever patriarchal manly man they were mad at in the first half of the book. Like, they'll end up like complementarian instead of patriarchal. Just like evangelical women will end up soft comp and think that's good.
Ginger Duggar.
And if a person has true freedom of choice, opportunity for fully informed consent, there's nothing wrong with them choosing to live a complementarianism type relationship structure. The problem that we have with that is doubting whether people actually have the freedom to say no, the freedom to revoke consent, and fully informed consent at the beginning of it. Okay. But in these books, it's portrayed more as complementarianism, which is, I kind of doubt that's how a lot of Amish communities live. So even, yeah, and even when the more obscure parts of Amish culture are portrayed, like the belief that using buttons is a sin and people should only use hooks or straight pins on their clothing, it's painted in a very rosy light. It's, oh, so cute and quaint and old-fashioned. And it's very much the way that Jill Rodriguez talks about the Amish in her community. It's, oh, how quaint, the slow and simple life. They know how to enjoy the small things. They eat so healthy. They know the value of hard work. Oh, such sweet people. Sadly, some of them are believing in a works-based salvation, and sadly, that means that they're going to hell. So I should witness to them.
Imagine being IFB fundamentalist and trying to go witness to Amish people.
Oh, buddy, people do.
That's crazy to me. That's
I have seen an IFB missionary to the Amish. A real thing. Not kidding. I checked out, you asked me if Mennonites are Calvinist. I checked this out.
Yeah, I want to know.
They seem like they would be Calvinist, right? Like, just like the vibe.
The Puritans were all Calvinist.
Mm-hmm.
Early America was very heavily Calvinist in theology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even people who were less religious kind of had a Calvinistic type bent to the way that they thought about the will of God. For example, Amish and Mennonites are Anabaptists, and they have beliefs that are not too far off from IFB or any kind of modern Baptist. The theology of, like, what is the Trinity? Who is Jesus? How did Jesus get to earth? What does Jesus' death on the cross accomplish? How are we supposed to look at scripture? Those foundational beliefs are not too far from Baptist foundational beliefs. There are many, many different subgroups of Amish in particular. It's mostly geographical. So an Amish community that lives in Pennsylvania will have slightly different beliefs and can be pretty seriously different rules from an Amish community that lives in Illinois or Iowa or Ohio or Kentucky. The clothing rules. Okay, so you know this because Orthodox Jewish man from one group looks different from another group, right?
Yes.
And an outsider might see, oh, they both have the, they both have peyote, they both have a big hat with a brim, they both have mostly black and white clothing and a prayer shawl with fringes that hang down. They're the same. But if you're familiar with that culture, you go, oh, no, 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 no. These guys are from vastly different groups because this guy has a different style of hat and this other guy has a fur hat and this guy has this certain kind of lapel.
Mm-hmm.
And the lapels, like the width of their lapels on their shirts, the layers of like where you put your prayer shawl, does it go over your shirt or is there a vest over it? All of that denotes what group of Orthodox a person is, right?
Right. I mean, like you could be Satmar, you could be Chabad, you could like.
And to an outsider, they might look, you go, oh yeah, that's an Orthodox Jewish man. But to somebody who knows a little bit about the culture, you see all these differences. Amish is going to be very much like that. The more you know about the particular groups, you would see all these differences. Like, so in some groups, women only wear like navy, purple, and emerald green dresses. But in other groups, they can wear navy, they can wear light blue, they can wear emerald green or purple or lavender or pink. And then in Mennonite, typically they wear the exact cut and style of a dress that an Amish lady would wear, but they are allowed to use patterned fabric, so dots or flowers or stripes, but it's the same cut. And the head coverings that Amish women wear also look really different depending on what geographical area or what order they belong to.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah. And the theology can differ as well.
You could spend your whole life as an outsider trying to study these different groups, and then you die and there's still 10,000 things you don't know.
Right, and people do, and some of those people, like Beverly Lewis, end up writing books about it. And this is why I don't have too much bad to say about her. Sometimes she says things I'm not a big fan of, but I don't have a lot to say bad about her as a person because she is really committed to understanding this.
Right, and you know, if she's writing about a fictional Amish group, like she's saying they live in Lancaster County, but she's not mm-hmm. writing about a real group of people that lives a certain, like, so she could say, oh, well, it's like this group, but she could make a detail different to make it sure mm-hmm. that they're, this specific group is differentiated from the ones that you.
That are real. I don't know if she does that or not. I, folks, I am probably going to read some Amish fiction after this.
Yeah, you'll have to report back and tell me what you think.
Genuinely so embarrassed, but I am actually going to go and read this.
I didn't think it was a bad book. Yeah. I don't think it's something that I would go out of my way to read if I didn't have to read it for the podcast, but I've had to read some truly unbearable things for this, but like we read the Russell Anderson biography. Mm-hmm. Oh God, this was a Soda Stream maximum pumps on the Soda Stream after that's how refreshing it was.
So just, I want to make it clear that there are all of these different orders and like subgroups of Amish. There can be more than one order in the same geographical area. And all of these groups would have a lot in common theologically and have slightly different rules about clothing or whatever. And often these groups will allow intermarriage because in some Amish communities, they have gotten to a point where they need to purposely marry outside the group for genetic health. It's a thing. They will ship like six boys from a community in Ohio to Pennsylvania to find wives and bring them back, like on purpose to try to diversify the gene pool. There are a lot of different orders. Some orders would believe in a salvation theology remarkably similar to the IFB, like you are saved by grace through faith in Jesus, not because of anything you do. And we live these rules because we believe that it pleases God and we think it makes us closer to God and improves our standing with God. But we don't think we go to heaven because we keep the rules. We go to heaven because of Jesus. The major difference would be that many Amish believe that to claim assurance of salvation on earth is prideful. So they don't do the like 1, 2, 3, repeat after me, sinner's prayer salvation experience because they believe it's prideful to claim that you know for sure that you're going to heaven, but the actual theology of how a person would be saved is similar. And a lot of IFB would look at that and say, close enough, you're probably going to heaven.
I do think they have a little bit of a point there.
Yeah.
I don't know. How many, we listened to Russell Anderson give his coal miner speech. He's like, I'm a uneducated coal miner. I made all this money. I gave it all away. I'm going to have my reward in heaven. Like that was his thing that he said, you know, repeat ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it's kind of presumptuous to say,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have my reward in heaven. Like to say, I know that I'm going to heaven for sure. I do feel like that's kind of presumptuous.
Yeah. And I think most fair-minded IFB would look at that and think, yeah, that probably counts for salvation because it's not the prayer that saves you. It's your faith in Jesus. So other orders of Amish, however, do believe that the rules of the church are what are the deciding factor. So you die and God judges you on whether you followed the rules. And that's how God decides if you go to heaven or not.
Really?
Yeah.
So you could change the rules of the church, and changing the rules of the church would change whether or not the people in their following them would go. That's very interesting.
Yeah, but also they don't change the rules. That's why they look like they live in the 1850s, because they haven't changed the rules since the 1850s.
Wow.
Like they don't change the rules. They really don't.
So like, I mean, to use the example from the book, if you wear something with the satin fabric that's shiny, then that could be the thing that dooms you to hell.
It could be.
Because you didn't follow the rules. Wow.
And then just to sew that all up, like some orders lean more Calvinist in their theology or Reformed theology. So it does differ a lot depending on what order you're talking about. None of them are that really that far off from either an IFB, Baptist, general framework of theology, or a Reformed Baptist theology. All of that to say, the ideas of a personal relationship with Jesus, or like saying a sinner's prayer and then afterward you're sure that you are going to heaven, are not common within Amish denominations or groups or orders. And that is a rock in my shoe with the whole Amish romance thing, because the writers want to fantasize or even almost fetishize the slow and simple life, the plain life, the farming and the traditions and all of that. And I don't have a big issue with that. A lot of people fantasize through fiction about lives that they don't live, whether that's the life of a mystery detective or a movie star or the lifestyles of the rich, or rich and famous, or Little House on the Prairie or whatever, or, you know, Housewives of Salt Lake City.
A lot of people do that in real life, too, or where they'll, you know, follow somebody who's a homesteading influencer and say, oh, man, their life looks so quaint. You know, they follow Kellyanne Havens on Instagram. Yeah. And
there's not, like, that's not really an issue. Fantasizing about a life that you don't live can certainly be done ethically and mindfully and be fine.
That's why I thought that the Amish would be Calvinist.
Yeah.
Kellyanne Havens, she is all homesteady.
Mm-hmm.
And she's Calvinist.
She should just be Amish already. I think she'd enjoy it.
I mean, but if she was Amish, she couldn't post on the internet.
Yeah. People fantasize through fiction about lives that they don't live, and that is okay, especially because the most famous writers of Amish fiction tend to have direct Amish ancestry, and they've spent a lot of time actually getting to know the communities that they're writing about. That doesn't feel like exploitation to me. People want to fantasize about the farm life. Like you said, the people follow influencers who do this. But fantasizing about them getting saved is a little weird to me. Even though it's just fictional characters, it feels disrespectful of the actual Amish religion. And like I said earlier, it's just a rock in my shoe regarding this whole thing, because everything else about the way that they treat the Amish is respectful and deferent, even to the point of maybe being glossing over actual problems within the Amish community and actual abuse and the failure to educate girls and the patriarchy and the genetic problems and the health problems that go untreated within the Amish community. They gloss over all of those actual problems in the name of deference and respectfulness, but then they will also undermine the entire religion by fantasizing about them getting saved. So that's the ethical consideration that gives me the ick about all of this. If a person wants to live in a system that is patriarchal or hard complementarianism, it is permissible if they have the opportunity to consent in the first place, true freedom of will to revoke consent at any point, because a person who is living under patriarchy is still a person who has the opportunity to revoke consent, and they have full informed consent at the beginning and ongoing. But they will gloss over those principles of permissible people who permissibly choose to live that way. They will gloss over actual abuse so that they can fetishize a way of life or appropriate a way of life, and then also fantasize about those people finding Jesus.
So why don't we go and take our other break, and then we'll come back and talk. What are we talking about in the third segment?
I have a quick little bit. It's not going to be too long, but I've run some statistics on these books myself, and I want to share them with you.
Fantastic. Can't wait to do that.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So we're back from our break, and I want to close this one out by talking about my theories on why these were so acceptable in my group of fundamentalists growing up. These books have pros and cons. If you look at them from the fundamentalist mindset, they are clean. They don't portray sex or drinking or dancing or swearing. They focus on God. They talk about God. They quote Bible verses, and the Bible verses are not unlikely to be King James because they're Amish.
Right. And that was the only version of the Bible in English that was available at the time, really.
Right.
That they would have been.
Although the Amish actually use a German translation of the Bible, if I'm remembering correctly.
Really?
I think so.
We should talk about the Amish more, because this is a very interesting topic.
I want to do a Are the Amish a Cult episode, because they are very much a high control group. But there is an element of consent that we don't often see with cults. But then we get to talk about, is it true consent if you have the opportunity to leave, but you lose everything if you do?
Right. Is coercive consent really consent? And the answer to that is usually no.
Yeah, I think there's some digging that we can do there.
If we do one of those things, what I would really like to do is I would like to actually get accounts from people who are currently members, although I don't know how easy that would be.
We work on and the internet. That might be complicated.
Well, hold on. I could go to and talk to somebody about it. I live in Pennsylvania. You know, that's true. And I would like to get ex-members to talk about it too, mm-hmm. because you know, you have to. We've been talking to people enough that we can understand that when somebody's like, this is definitely not a cult thing that I'm a part of, you don't necessarily take them at face value, and you understand how to parse the details.
So those are some of the pros of Amish fiction for the IFB. Some of the cons are that they deal with deconstruction themes. They portray more physical contact than the IFB would allow. They portray Rumspringa, which is not a thing that the IFB would allow.
The thing I'm thinking, though, is that if you deconstruct from being Amish, like, you could potentially have a character in an Amish romance that deconstructs a little bit from being Amish, but they still end up more strict than an IFB person would be at the end of the book.
Yeah, that literally happens in one of the books I'm going to tell you about.
So it's not like you can just say, oh, well, now they're you know, promoting atheism, because they start from a place that's so much more extreme. Mm-hmm. That you have some more wiggle room for deconstruction to get back to like the level that you deem acceptable.
So I do think that one of the main reasons that these are so acceptable in parts of the IFB is the endings of the books. So if you don't want to have any stories spoiled, you might need to skip a little bit here. I'm not going to tell the whole story of any particular book, but I am going to spoil some ending plot points.
I'm disappointed in this, because what I was planning on doing was I was planning on reading a full anthology of every Amish fiction, romance fiction work that has ever been done. And
that would literally take you the rest of your life. Every 4 days in 2012, man.
I could write a doctoral dissertation about it, though.
You could.
Actually, I could probably write an actual dissertation about that if I did that. This is
You probably could. Someone may have done it.
I'm sure they have.
So I sat down and I was going to do 10 of these books, and then I ended up doing 20, and then I ended up with 28.
Classic. This is peak Sadie behavior.
Well, I started at 8:30 one night, and I thought, well, I'll just go to 9:30. And I got until like 9 o'clock, and I had done the 10 that I was originally going to do. So I just kept on going. So here are 28 books that are Amish romance and how they end. So the first 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 11, 12, 13, 14 are by Beverly Lewis.
She's prolific.
She is. And I picked, I do have multiple different authors. There are so many of hers because they're all in series. So we have the Heritage of Lancaster County series, the Seasons of Grace series, the Rose trilogy, and the Abrams Daughters series.
One thing that I noticed from looking at all of the titles of Beverly Lewis's novels is that she gives her Amish romance fiction novels horror movie names.
Yeah, she kind of does. So the Heritage of Lancaster County series is The Shunning, The Confession, and The Reckoning. The end of that story is that the main character deconstructs and becomes Mennonite. So, compromise. In the Seasons of Grace series, The Secret, The Missing, and The Telling, the person who left the Amish comes back, makes a public confession, repents, and is welcomed back into the church. In the Rose trilogy, The Thorn, The Judgment, and The Mercy, one person who has left the Amish comes back to the Amish, and another person who has left compromises by becoming conservative evangelical, like kind of IFB-ish. And in the Abram's Daughter series, The Covenant, The Betrayal, The Sacrifice, The Prodigal, and The Revelation, there's a lot more characters. It's a like multi-generational series about a family. Three or four different people think about leaving the Amish or do leave, and then a couple people get shunned because they do leave. But in the end, everybody finds Jesus and everybody goes back Amish. So I also checked out two different books by Wanda E. Brunstetter, who is another really, really well-known Amish fiction romance writer. In the book Lydia's Charm, nobody even thinks about leaving the Amish. In the Amish Millionaire series...
What?
The Amish Millionaire series is a 6-book series. An older Amish man has a worldly son who has left the church and gone out into the world and become a millionaire. For 6 entire books, they fight about whether the son is going to come back and be Amish or not. The son has a fiance who has never been, like, never fundy, never Amish. The son is making a bunch of money. They fight over money all the time. And then the dad dies. And then finally, the son, in one single paragraph, reads the Bible and becomes a different person. He gives up all his money. He goes back to the Amish, and triple points for this particular series. Because not only does the person who has left the Amish come back to the Amish, he brings his worldly fiance with him to the Amish also.
I want to know what the Goodreads reviews for this.
That's how I found the endings to all of these, was reading spoiler reviews on Goodreads.
That's what I had to do too for like the part 2 and 3 of the Heritage of Lancaster County series, because people will literally just say, this review contains spoilers. I'm like, great, that's the one I'm clicking.
That's primarily how I found all of these.
Positive, negative?
You get both. You really see both. Like, this particular series, a lot of people did not like that the main character read the Bible one time. So 5 books out of this 6-book series, and the main character was resistant to faith and resistant to his dad and all about money for 5.5 books, and then his faith conversion happens in literally one paragraph according to Goodreads reviews. So yeah, he reads the Bible one time. So he reads the Bible one time. He becomes a different person. And the rest of the book is just him giving away all of his money and convincing his fiance, who, as I said, has never been Amish, that she is also going to join the Amish with him.
That seems extremely unreasonable. That seems really difficult to do.
Yeah, Goodreads readers tend to like Wanda Brunstetter, but this series didn't seem to be very popular.
I can't imagine that it would be.
And I kind of feel bad.
This is so... It's not like... Nothing like this could ever happen in a million years. And I mean, I'm sure you know people who have had... Who have, you know, been going through something tough in their lives, and then there have been... The IFB got them in, and then over a period of time, they decided... I'm going to go full fundy and go extremely, like, you know, no pants for the women and, you know, King James inspired and preserved. I mean, in one paragraph, you read the Bible once and you're suddenly like.
So I also checked out a couple of books by Beth Wiseman. So one book is called Plain Perfect, in which a young woman learns that her own mother left the Amish as a teen. And she goes back to live with her grandparents for a while to see what the whole Amish thing is about. Predictably, she falls in love with the Amish way of life, finds Jesus, and becomes Amish. Also, An Amish Year is actually four short stories in a trench coat. It's like four short stories, one for each season in one book. It seems that in that book, everybody stays Amish, but nobody new becomes Amish. So just a... tie for that one. Then finally, I checked out some books by Suzanne Woods Fisher. In the book The Choice, one person chooses between leaving the Amish and staying, but they choose to stay. One other person chooses to leave, but they may or may not come back at the end of the series. I was tired of reading synopsis at this point. Another person in the story was raised Amish and got saved and became a born again Christian and does not stay Amish, but like stays pretty close to Amish. And then in the book, The Keeper by Suzanne Woods Fisher, nobody leaves the Amish. Nobody wants to leave the Amish.
So that's what, 28 stories?
28 stories books? Total. And in the ones that I happened to survey, no one flat out leaves religion. Except for the occasional villain. And almost every time that villain is redeemed in the end by coming back to religion or even going all the way back Amish. And the people who do leave the Amish, who are not villains, either become Mennonite or become very conservative Christian otherwise.
See, I mean, I get why the IFB would say, okay, see, this is good because no one fully deconstructs, or even the people that fully deconstruct end up where we are, so we're right.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they go a little bit farther than us, but like that's just to show you how much worse it could be. I do feel like that's just not representative of real life, though, because, I mean, we know people who have deconstructed from... And we have many listeners who have a lot of variety of different, you know, beliefs now, especially people who have deconstructed from fundamentalism. Like, we know people who grew up, you know, like very extremely fundy, and now they're kind of just like non-denominational kind of Christians. And then we know people who have deconstructed from being fundy, and now they're just like fully atheist. And we know people who have, you know, ended up in other faiths that are outside of Christianity. We know people who end up like really interested in spirituality that's like not of the Abrahamic God, but just really into like New Age spirituality. And we know people who are really into like all sorts of different things. And it just seems kind of dishonest to write books where no one ever ends up not Christian anymore.
If we come back and dig more into the Amish in a future episode, I want to see if that holds up to real life, because I have heard statistics that a really high percentage of Amish kids do their Rumspringa and come back and get baptized into the church and don't leave permanently. So I want to dig into why that is, because on the outside, it can seem like, oh, they're happy with that way of life. But we know there are also huge social pressures and social ramifications to leaving, even before baptism. So I want to come back and dig into that at some point.
This has been a lot of fun. This has been a great episode to...
This episode just brought me so much joy. I am actually going to go back and read the the Abrams Daughters series. That's the one that I think I remember being really good.
Yes, so today is what? Today is the... That you're hearing this is the 12th. 2 days from now is Valentine's Day. And on Valentine's Day, we're coming out with a special bonus episode just for our patrons, in which Sadie and I look at a book by Dr. Jack Skop. I use doctor, excuse me, pedophile Jack Skop, convicted criminal Jack Skop, who is now out of jail. And this book is called 12 Myths of Marriage. And Jack Skop, before he went to prison, he deemed himself like the IFB marriage expert. So I'm really interested to hear what he has to say about how to have a good marriage, an above average marriage. And we're going to be talking about that. And that's going to come out in a couple of days for our patrons. So make sure that you check that out on patreon.com/leavingedenpodcast. You can follow us on our socials. We're on Facebook and we're on Instagram, and you can join our Facebook group. Facebook group is Eden Exodus. So is the subreddit. You can follow me on all my socials at @GAVRIELHACOHEN. Sadie.
You can follow me on Instagram at Sadie Carpenter Music, on Twitter at Hell Yes Sadie, and on TikTok at Sadie Carpenter 1.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Happy Valentine's Day. Bye bye. But old rolling river of time, you've healed me in too many days. No regrets, no confusion, there'll be no pollution. I'm so thankful I've decided to change my ways. I'm so thankful I decided.